I am talking today with a very special person in my life. His name is Drew Zarembo, and he's special to me in many ways. But first of all, let me tell you a little bit about him. He's a recognized soloist, artist, arranger, composer. His works have been performed by the BBC Orchestra, the WDR Big Band in Germany, by the Dallas Symphony, by the Metropole Orchestra in the Netherlands. He is a professor of jazz composition and arranging at the University of Northern Colorado in the United States. He's a worldwide recognized clinician and guest artist on saxophone. But I think what's very special about him is that I've known Drew since he was in seventh grade, because I had the privilege and the honor of working with him as a teacher in jazz festivals that we had here in Europe when he was still a young student at the International School of Brussels. And I've just been tickled to see his career blossom, and I'm not surprised after I heard him in middle school already what his life path might bring him to. He was also an IB student when he was at the International School of Brussels, and I just thought this would be a very interesting podcast in order to relay some thinking, some thoughts, some reflections about what it was like, the connection between being an IB student and actually being a practitioner of music, both as a performer, as an arranger, as a creator, and as a teacher. And I couldn't think of any better person to talk to than Drew Zarembo. So, Drew, hello, welcome. It's great to have you here and great to be talking with you.
Hi, Jim. Thank you so much for having me. You're opening the floodgates of nostalgia in my mind. I think fondly of our massive, crazy concert in Tokyo. Do you remember that one? I think it was 2007, 2006?
Around there, yeah.
Right around there. It was one of the highlights of, one of the highlights of my life. Just a beautiful concert, an incredible week, crazy music, wonderful music. You exposed me to Don Ellis. We did a couple Don Ellis charts. Loved that. And we did Sing, Sing, Sing with the taiko drums. And it was just, and yeah, you've been involved in my life since I was in seventh grade, which is, Jim is a dear, dear friend, and I'm so just happy to be here and to talk about music with a dear friend and mentor, and someone who encouraged me to go back to the States and study music. Listed North Texas as one of the places to consider going for my career and for undergrad, so I owe a lot to you, Jim, and your beautiful family. So thank you for having me here. And
so let's start off here. Why don't you start off telling us a little bit about yourself? What kind of work are you doing? Where are you working? Give us a little bit of a personal background and a synopsis, if you can, of your long life story in terms of.
I'll be as brief as I can. I did not grow up in a musical family, but my parents recall me saying when I was 3 or 4 that I wanted to learn every instrument in the world. And so they started, which was a shock to them, because they met playing tennis and are very sporty people. And here, this music guy on the scene now. Anyways, they started me on piano, and I was very, very lucky that they paid for and took me to piano lessons from the age of 6 through 17. And I started with, basic piano books and went all the way through the Grieg Concerto. And also my first piano teacher also, by the time I was in first or second grade, had me do, it was 30 minute lessons, but then also 15 minutes of music theory on a computer program. I was very, very fortunate. It set me up, the piano and theory and everything set me up for so much. Then, but when I was in the car, my mom listened to smooth jazz on the 94.7, The Wave. I'm from Southern California originally. And I heard the saxophone and thought, oh, that's an instrument I want to play. Started picking up the saxophone in fifth grade. Then we moved to Belgium. And this is a very important part of the story, because this is where I started interacting with music in a very different way, meeting a lot of different people from all over the world, not just Californians, Americans, specifically Californians, but now musical cultures and people from people speaking all sorts of different languages. And then getting together at jazz festivals in The Hague for solo and ensemble, wind ensemble, and a whole host of musical experiences that have influenced me to this day. And then, of course, as you mentioned, doing IB music with my wonderful mentor and teacher, Dr. Eric Delson, at the International School of Brussels. Then we'll quicken up the story here. Went to North Texas, University of North Texas, to study jazz saxophone. Fell in love with composition, started composing for the big bands down there. Ended up staying and doing my master's in jazz composition because of this incredible teacher who was there, Rich DeRosa, who was the chief conductor for the WDR band for several years and became a huge influence on me and my music. Stayed in Dallas for 3 years as a freelancer, was planning on moving to Los Angeles to be a freelancer out there and do the jazz and studio scene. And then got a call to, got married also when I was in Dallas, which is a very important detail. And then all out of nowhere, got a call from the head of jazz studies at the University of Northern Colorado saying, we noticed you hadn't applied to our jazz composer professor position. We were hoping you would do that. And I said, oh my goodness, here we go. So I applied and got the job and now have been in Colorado for 6 years. I just got tenure last year, and which is crazy to think about, and continuing but still writing music a lot, still performing a fair bit. The projects that bring me the most joy and sense of pride are the international collaborations that I've done. And I don't say that just because I'm here. You ask me any day of the week, this is my answer. I got to go to China to live in China for 3 months and study Chinese opera and combine with jazz. The last international project I did, I was commissioned to write a Hindustani jazz fusion piece for orchestra, bansuri, tabla, bass, and guitar, which I just finished, called Rhapsody and Rag Jog. And the commissioner, Anjan Shah, is promoting it and trying to do it with orchestras across the country and all over the world. And is actually going to be, we did the world premiere here in Colorado this year, 2024, they're going to be doing it on the East Coast next year. And there's actually a group in Belgium that's interested in doing it. So, but I do all sorts of different kinds of musics and love it all, and love teaching as well, of course. So that's a short, long-winded answer, as the great Chick Corea would say.
Let's narrow that down just a little bit. You've had a rich, even with your young age, it's such a rich, marvelous music career. When you were in high school at the International School of Brussels, you mentioned that you were an IB student. And I know that the IB program has shifted quite a bit since that time. But maybe you could just give us a little bit of a moment. What was it like being an IB student back then? What did you gain from that? Or what do you remember from studying the course back then?
So I decided not to do the full IB. I decided to kind of piecemeal a program together with some AP classes and some IB classes, so to allow me a little more flexibility to study music and continue in doing the amount of practicing that I wanted to do. I obviously did higher music. I owe so much to my experience at ISB and doing international and having that international perspective, not just because of some of the experiences that I've already told you about in China, studying Indian music, and then wanting to develop relationships with people overseas, like my trips to Japan and Australia and Germany, among other places. My wife is Argentine. just an immense love and respect for the global community and international culture. But the quality of the education as well. Eric is now a dear friend, but was a great mentor and started my, and realizing now, I mentioned I fell in love with composition in college, but the truth is he planted that seed during my years studying with him, because he would give me assignments all the time. I remember distinctly, he said, "All right, Drew, I want you to write a piece for solo flute based on the octatonic scale." And I said, "Well, I've only written pieces for piano and saxophone. What do you mean, flute? How does that work? What's the octatonic scale?" And he said, "All right, now you have some homework to do. You need to, you know." And he gave me some things to listen to, and it was a profound experience being at ISB and doing and being in that international community that I owe so much to. There's no doubt about it.
If you were a high school student again, you're looking back at your high school musical experiences, is there anything that you would do differently? Or could you offer any words of wisdom to a serious high school music student, whether an IB student or not, things they should be thinking about if you're really starting to get serious in music?
I do get to think about this quite a bit because we do have some high school fest. We have a wonderful high school festival called the Greeley UNC Jazz Festival. And we have a lot of high school students coming through. You know, I talk about a couple different things. I guess my advice, my thoughts on the subject are to, if you want to do music, make sure you're in love with it. Don't do it for someone else. One of the beautiful things of it is its variability. There's not a standard, oh, get this degree, get this internship, get this job. There's a lot of different paths it could take. It could be an education route. It could be a more composition route. It could be a performance route. It could be a research route. It could be an amalgamation of all those and so much more in the 21st century than any other time. Being a musician involves being all of those things and specializing less and being a jack of all trades with maybe still a little bit of specialty here and there, but having, you know, I think everyone needs to be, let me back up a little bit. But I think what I would recommend to everyone is, first of all, to engage with music in many different ways. And so I encourage people to engage with the three primary elements of music, melody, rhythm, and harmony. And so I encourage everyone to sing, make sure that they sing and engage their voice and engage their melodic sense, to play drums and engage their rhythmic sense, and to play piano and engage their harmonic sense. Because these are the three, people maybe can hear harmony, but you won't really truly, truly know until you play that chord on the piano, what it feels like to play it and to absorb it. Or same thing with a beat on the drums or to sing a melody. It's hard to, not to say that you have to do it at a high level. It's not about doing it at a high level. I don't play drums at a high level. I don't sing at a high level, but I sing and tap and play all day. So just to invest in your musical skills, to remember to not neglect any of the, we sometimes accent piano more than others because of our Western background, but we can't forget the importance of drums around the world, but in particular from Africa, especially for me as a jazz musician. And then all worldwide, the importance of singing and the vocal and lyrical connection with the music as the voice was our first instrument, right? So with those are like kind of like when you're practicing, three things to engage with your practice. But then as we were talking about earlier, Jim, to listen. And not just to listen widely, which is really important, of course, to be influenced by a lot of different things. But for me, it's to listen deeply. And I think right now, I was very fortunate that I just had an MP3 player with, you know, my 50 songs on it, and it was on repeat constantly. And for your generation, it was a record, and it was 5 or 6 songs, and that was it. And there, Spotify, the world, suddenly on our phones, we have the entire record history of all music. And it's completely overwhelming. How could you possibly dig deep into anything when you have an ocean, you know? And so what I recommend to students is find something you love and memorize everything about it. And listen deeply, because that's going to increase your music vocabulary and your ability to talk about music, because you have now a more of an quote unquote expert frame of reference to bring to other genres, to bring to other styles. And I think there's more I have, but it's escaping me right now. So I'll turn it back to you.
You actually inspired a thought when you were starting to talk about the relationship between what you need to know in jazz and what jazz meant and so on. And it got me thinking about the connection between jazz and global music, dealing with the unfamiliar. For example, when I was a young student, a young middle school, high school student, and my first exposure to jazz and learning about jazz, of course, we're taught that jazz was had its African influence, and it started with ragtime and Dixie, and there was the hymns and the African American influence and the exposure and the development of the Western exposure to these hymns and to the African experience. And that, I mean, in a very, very broad nutshell, foundation of jazz that you needed to have a Western culture at the time in the late 19th century, early 20th century, post-antebellum time in the United States, where these it was the opportunity for it to merge. It connected, and it went through that pretty much for that whole century, going to fusion and going to contemporary and going to who knows what in terms of what jazz evolved into. But I'd be kind of curious to know your thoughts on this too, because if someone were to ask me now what the definition of jazz is, well, it's certainly more than that African American influence. And I find it very difficult to delineate the difference between jazz and global music, because what I find is that now you have this culture of American music going back to pop and rock and roll and disco and hip hop and funk. And now it's making its way back to its roots, where now finding the fusion of these elements, developing something that we have no idea where this is going to go to, but it's like I have a feeling it's taking a full circle. This is not a question, it's just a comment, but thinking in terms of how did it get there? It got there because we're listening to the unfamiliar. We're dealing with things that we didn't know. We as human beings are looking and valuing a culture that's not ours and finding relationships in those cultures.
I'm not too much of a jazz historian, but there's no doubt about it that and there are some scholars who don't even like the word jazz,
Yeah, well, that's
but
always
prefer, of course, Black American music, like you were talking about, like the whole would put jazz in the as the father of all these other genres that came from it, are going to R&B and hip hop, basically like the lineage of all this together. And which to me as a white person makes me think about the music in a different way like if I'm going to play this music, which is not of my particular culture, I need to do it with the most intention and respect. It's not to say that I can't do it, right? That of course not. Music is for everyone, but it's saying there's a history here, there's an intention, and if I'm going to get at the core of the music, I should study not just the history, but also some of the isms of going back to ragtime, but also from bebop and transcription and all of these things that I think are really important. And I think of other musics that were kind of fusions as well. We call Latin jazz part of jazz, but really it was happening independently.
exactly.
The fusion happened before it got to the United States. It was happening in Cuba, it was happening in Brazil, it was happening all over the continent in their different ways. And as a lover of Afro-Caribbean music and Afro-Brazilian music, these are other different types of fusions that were happening due to let's say what it was, the ugliness and the evil of slavery forcing this fusion. But now we have this incredible music that's happened because of that, that we can now dig into and study and cherish and respect and love. Not sure where it's going, but all to say there is
Many
a
have gone.
yeah, right. I remembered something I did want to say earlier, and that is especially for advice for some high school students. I thought of two more things, and because we talked about composite, we talked about performing mostly is what I was getting at. But also, I call the four categories of making a career in music are performing, teaching, composing, and technology. And so I think developing not just a little bit in each area, I think is important for high school students. So if you're more of a tech guy, don't not perform. Make sure you spend some time performing too. If you're just a performance person, you want to spend some time on the computer learning how logic works, how get yourself in front of a DAW, and start writing music. And so for composers, I say a lot of the same thing. I say, make sure you finish your pieces. That's one of the biggest things I recommend for people to do. And that I thankfully had a teacher who, Eric, who encouraged me to do that, you know, because it's not a piece if it's just it's if it's a fragment out there. You need to put a final bar line on it, and you need to put it in front of a musician, and so you can learn from it. So yeah, developing those four areas I think are important for high school. And which is what sounds like what IB is really focused on, and what I did too in a slightly different way, but definitely did. I was able to get a lot of that out of my IB experience.
You sort of highlighted this already, but if you could reflect back on your first year as a freshman at North Texas, did you feel ready? Did you feel prepared? Did you feel what did were there surprises? Did you did what your experiences in the past, did you feel like you had an advantage over anybody or a disadvantage or what?
I definitely felt like I had an advantage. It's not to like I got to I tested out of a lot of I tested all out all of all out of all of my piano, out of all of my a lot of theory and oral skills. And it gave me more time to dig into some things that I wanted to dig into, composition, orchestration. I got to sing in the jazz choirs. And I was very grateful for that I had more time on my schedule in order to do some of the things that I wanted to develop more. So no, if anything, I was, you know, everyone, there's no, everyone can pursue a music degree if they want to. I believe there's not a, there's talent comes in many different levels, but at the end of the day, talent only takes you so far. It's perspiration and hard work that will carry you over the finish line into a career. Some people were really starting out with very little theory experience, and some people got discouraged by that, and other people met the challenge and rose to it. And so, which is not to say that's a good or a bad thing. It just meant, hey, that was for them or wasn't for them. So there were a lot of varying levels. I was very fortunate because of IB and going back all the way to my music theory lessons as an 8-year-old. With my piano lessons, starting from there and building all the way through that, I was very well prepared for my freshman year at North Texas. So,
I think there's an aspect of the current new IB curriculum that wasn't there when you were an IB student. It's called a contemporary music maker. And it's not a test or anything. It's what the students have to do is they have to create an artistic vision, record the process of it, and then record the project. It could be something like making an arrangement for a special event or for a theme, environmental theme, or soundtrack to a movie or whatever. Anyway, to do this, they have to multitask. They have to know how to collaborate with people. They know how have to arrange. They know how to they need to know how to work. They need to know how to organize. They need to know how to set deadlines, book rehearsal rooms, make a budget. And I think I could see that as something, if you were still in high school, I could see that something you would just chomping at the bit at. You would just think, oh, I got this idea, or I can't decide which artistic vision I have. I got 100 of them, and I'd like to do this and this and this. But basically, what it's supposed to be is that there's really no written test anymore. It's going on to university. A university would be requested to say, well, why should we take you? And the student would say, well, here, let me show you my YouTube channel. This is what I did. This is my project. This is who I am. You can hear me in my music here. You can hear me playing. You can hear what I did to organize this. You can see the amount of research that I've done to do this. This is it. And it's in 7.5 minutes.
That's awesome.
But I was just thinking, you are sort of in a stage as a, you are now a mentor of young students, that's for sure. You've talked about having these mentors in your life, and you've sort of touched on this, and maybe you could go a little bit deeper on this for college students that are getting ready to move on. They're exiting the program, they've been through the system, and they're getting ready for a serious career in music. Could you highlight a little bit more about the demands of teaching for a student like that? What do you find your responsibilities for preparing students for, let's say, the real world? It's not college anymore. It's not for the grade. This is for your bread and butter. This is what you need to do. Do you have any words of wisdom that you would like to impart with us in terms of college level students?
I'd love to. It's actually something I think about most days as a college professor and teaching for the most part grad students. I'm very lucky in that all my private lesson students are grad students, and I teach one or two undergraduate classes a year, but and I interact with them in lots of other settings. But yeah, my primary purpose is to prepare my graduate composition students for a career in composition and other things, those four big categories I told you about. First and foremost, I want to get them skills, right? So like we talked about with piano, drums, and singing, but for a composer, skills involve writing for a lot of different genres, for a lot of different instrument types. So we spend a semester looking at big band and small group writing. We spend a semester looking at vocal writing. We spend a semester looking at orchestral writing. So that way, and then preparing for their senior master's recital. That's a kind of like on a more skill set level. But what I tell them, our first lesson is always the same. I ask the same question. All right, we're here in grad school. Let's get ready for the day that you're leaving. It'll be over before you realize it. What do you want to do? What is your goal? And what is your 10-year goal? I always work backwards. What's your dream? And then we work backwards. Ah, in 10 years, what do we need to do to get in 10 years from now? What's that? 5 years from now, 3 years from now, 1 year from now. Ah, okay. Let's build this out and see if we can achieve that dream. And then if they say something that's really realistic, I'll say, oh, that's perfect, let's go. Or if they say something that's very lofty, I say, okay, great. So like maybe that's a little too specific. Let's broaden that dream just a tiny bit and talk about some ways to get there. But ultimately, it's what you already said. And what I love that IB is doing with the high school students is an artistic vision. You can't, the era of this just being a sideman in the music world of just playing in an orchestra. There are not enough orchestras. Playing in just the studios, there isn't enough studio work. Just doing one thing is over. And that's what I was talking about with it being a jack of all trades. You need to be able to work year round. You need to have a couple different plates spinning. And so if some people do it just performing, but very, very few do. Most people are performing and teaching, or most people are composing and teaching. Some people are just doing DAW work as an engineer, but they also might do live sound. Or one friend of mine is a trumpet player and professor and graphic designer.
That's
It
cool.
doesn't mean, yeah. There's all sorts of, and they can feed each other too. They don't, they might not, they might be completely different hustles. But no, I'm always the, it's, you can't just wait for the work to come to you. We all have to be, it's kind of, it sounds really cliche, but we all have to be leaders. We can't just be sidemen. We have to be leaders of our life. That doesn't mean capital L leader. It just means, a leader, you have having a plan, not just stumbling through it. If you're not, you have to be somewhat entrepreneurial. You have to be ready to adapt, change, go with this idea. Oh, that's not working. Try something else in those different four categories of music. I think the most stable career is, of course, education, being a full-time educator. But even that, because you're still mentoring students, and so you have to have your finger on the pulse of what's going on in the music world, in other parts of society. And so it's not just a matter of, oh, well, this is easy. No, it's not. It's actually the hardest one. It's easier in that you don't have to be as entrepreneurial, but there's still inner politics and budgets and things that you want to do if you want to grow your program and have it be more successful and a great experience for the students. You need to apply that same mindset to your teaching position.
One of the things I tell my own students that are getting serious about music, that want to consider a career in music, they already know this in high school already. I say to them that the odds are pretty good that the job that you're going to end up doing hasn't been created yet. And the second thing I said, the odds are further pretty good that the job that you end up doing, you will probably have created yourself. And this whole concept of entrepreneurial and being your own manager is something to really give some forethought on, I think.
And some people it comes very naturally, and some people it takes a long time to get there, but that's not a bad thing, you know? And it means that people who are really entrepreneurial will take a lot of risks and try different things. And people who are less will find the opportunities that are just right for them in order to create their career. And this is okay when this happens. It actually happened a lot during the pandemic because work just dried up. A lot of people switched careers because they weren't they didn't decide they decided that, you know, music was important to them, but not as a career. And so they were working in music, they were doing all sorts of different jobs, and then they decided to go into coding or real estate or something with a little bit more security. And there's totally nothing wrong with that. And maybe sometimes they do this and combine it with a music career. Sometimes they leave music behind and do it just as a hobby. And some musicians are like, oh man, that's really sad. And I'm actually like, no, this person is pursuing what they need to do for their life, you know? And they'll never lose music. You can't lose music. And it only enriches. It only gives. It never takes away. So that's just to put some perspective on that, and not to say, well, being a musician is the best or the highest calling or something like that. We know that's, more hyperbole.
Let's change it just a little bit before we run out of time here. Can you tell us a little bit about what are you doing now? What are you getting your hands all wet with? And
Certainly, I'm very proud of my latest CD release called Reunion, which is a big band CD of that we recorded in 2021 that we released in late 2023. So it's not even a year old yet. And it's a big band album produced by my mentor and friend John Clayton. And it's wonderful. I'm very proud of it. It's a CD with a bunch of original music and reimaginations. That's on Spotify and anywhere you consume music. Like I mentioned before, the Rhapsody in Rock Joke project is something I'm very, very proud of. The 20-minute concerto for bansuri and tenor saxophone with strings and tabla and rhythm section. I'm very proud of that. Right now, the project that probably occupies most of my time is I'm the artistic director of the Colorado Jazz Repertory Orchestra, which is I think we're in our 10th or 11th year of existence. I've been involved with the project for about 4 or 5 years now. And I'm the music director and artistic director. So we play about 6 or 7 big band shows a year and anywhere from 10 to 20 small group concerts a year. And I put together collaborating with my executive director, we put together themes. And then I pick music that fits those themes. And we want to get a big audience enjoying great American music. So we do straight ahead jazz. We're doing some New Orleans jazz. We just did a whole concert of Brazilian music. We just did a whole concert of Carole King and James Taylor. So part of the more American hit makers Not straight ahead jazz at all, but shares a lot in common with great American music. And then we're doing a soul, and we're recording a CD next month with the great Tashiana Lady May Mayfield, a collaborator of mine from Dallas who just moved to Denver, an incredible vocalist. I'm writing a bunch of arrangements for her. I just finished actually all of them, and we're recording in July. So that occupies a lot of my time, is working with that great organization. You go to coloradojazz.org to find out more about us. And then I'll actually be taking my sabbatical, not this year, but the following year, where I hope to be living in Colombia with my family for at least a couple months, and studying Colombian music and learning Spanish, and collaborating with some of the conservatories in Bogota and Medellin, as part of a partnership between UNC and the government of Colombia, in exchanging information, music education, and processes together.
Oh,
So,
exciting. Wow.
yes.
You just don't stay still.
No, that's one thing I don't do well. Although my the biggest joy in my life is my 3-year-old son, Charlie. So I do make sure I try to take some time and spend time with him and my wife, and spend time just as a family together, sharing him the joy of music and everything that comes along with that.
Drew, we're just about to wrap this up. Do you have any closing thoughts or ideas or greetings you want to give the global music community?
Only to say thank you, Jim, for the conversation. I hope this was helpful and enlightening to the listeners. Just to hopefully to encourage you that music is important and beautiful and worth our time. And as much as I think that's something we need to believe in ourselves and believe in music, because there are fortunately forces out there that support us, but there are forces out there that would say that music is not worth supporting and music is not worth our time. And they're wrong. And that our art matters and our humanity matters. And so that's all I'll leave you with.
Yeah, very well said. Drew, this has been a real privilege and an honor for me after all these years to have this sort of fireside chat with you and to have you share your thoughts. We wish you well. We look forward to hearing this work and wish you well with all the experiences, the multitude of projects that you have going on. So also, I want to thank you dearly for spending this time with us. It's been a real gas. Thanks.
The pleasure's all mine. Thank you so much, Jim. Take care.